And welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 726. As we continue our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2025 fantasy baseball season, we head to Houston. The Houston Astros, a team that's perennially in the mix in the AL West and in the American League more often than not. A team that's had a little turnover this year, though. So that'll make for some fun discussions, because in years past, it's pretty much straightforward domination, domination, domination. We got some moving pieces here. In order to help me break all this down, as a friend of the show, a Houston Astros fan who's helped me preview this team every year we've done the previews, you can check out his website, armchairroto.com. A phenomenal fantasy player, especially the draft champions streets. Got some really cool articles up there to check out there. And you can find him on Twitter at armchairroto. Russell Withers, how we doing, my friend?
Hey, Bubba, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. You mentioned that I do this every season for you. This is the third time I've done the Astros preview for you. And it kind of gets fun because I can go back and look at what I said last year and the year before, and it sort of colors what I want to say today. So there's sort of like a running score sheet we can keep.
Yes, definitely. And like you put some notes here. I'm glad we were talking about that. You mentioned I've had some other people talk about, yeah, I wasn't in on so-and-so, or I was too high on so-and-so, and then things. But that's the world of fantasy we live in, which is fun. We don't know. We're playing a game to try to predict the future. So yep, That's always fun stuff. But real quick, before we start talking players, because there's, even though I mentioned the turmoil or change in team, there's still a lot of good players to talk about. What were your overall thoughts on the 2024 season, though, before we start talking 2025?
It's weird talking about the Astros during this phase of my life. You know, when I was a kid, it was all Biggio and Bagwell, and then later on Lance Berkman, that whole era, the Roy Oswalt era. And then we had, you know, the 2000s teams where Roger Clemens was pitching. And so there have been all these really good teams throughout my life. There's only been one really bad period they've gone through. But man, the last 8 years or so are just something I wish every baseball fan could really experience. Just having your team in it and expecting to win every single season is just a whole lot of fun. It makes baseball more fun, and it's just something. Like I said, I just wish it was something everybody could experience, because it's just been awesome. And yeah, the team's a little bit different this year, but I think that window is still open, and I think they're still a really good team and going to compete again. So we're going to keep that going.
Yep, I agree. You guys have had a heck of a run. A lot of guys that are still there, a lot of youth coming through, which is a testament to the team and the powers to be to build as such. And I'm with you. Like, I, you know, I keep joking about it. We will talk about it eventually. But yeah, some players are gone, but there are some players filling in that'll be just fine. Like, there are some adjustments that'll be made, but overall still a very, very good team and a fun AL West. So let's get going on this. And I know on the outline I put January 1st. I changed it to January 8th to shrink it down to 11 drafts. So anybody keeping track at home, January 8th, January 27th, 11 DC drafts to get it kind of ADP just for discussion's sake. And we'll start with your leadoff man, the veteran of the team. He's going to be 35 years old this year, but continues to get it done. And that is when Jose Altuve, he's coming in with an ADP of 65 over those last 11 drafts. But Russell, when you look at Altuve here, it's impressive. 2022 last year, 20 homers, 22 steals, just continues to get it done. Hits for average. I know eventually the wall always hits, like father time will win, but I don't know when it's coming for Jose Altuve. What are your thoughts on the upcoming 2025 season?
Yeah, you know, Altuve, he's the heartbeat of the team. He's probably a future Hall of Famer. And you know what you're getting with him. He's a five-category guy, for now at least. Plays almost every day. Nearly had 700 plate appearances last season, and he's topped 600 in three of the last four. So you know you're getting the volume with him. He's getting old. He'll turn 35, but his skill set is pretty stable. But there are a few things worth mentioning. You know, I mentioned his calling card or his batting average and his power speed combo. If you look at his skills, his contact rate fell below 80% for the first time in his 14-year career last season, which is still above league average, but it's worth noting. He walked less than he has in nearly a decade, and he swung more often than he has in nearly a decade. So he's getting more aggressive as his skills kind of erode just a little bit. And Steamer's kind of picking up on that. They're projecting him as more of a 270 hitter than the 300 hitter that we've become accustomed to drafting. And, you know, he's never really been a big power metric guy, but he knows how to hit the ball hard. Like, he doesn't barrel the ball up a lot. He doesn't have a big hard hit rate, and his exit velocities are not off the charts. But he has these skills, and he knows how to do what he wants with the ball. He's an extreme pull guy, so he could just kind of hit the ball to left field and dump it into the Crawford boxes. And you know, that's not really a power thing. That's more of a skill thing. Mm-hmm. And I could see him keeping that up for at least a few more seasons. I don't think it's that difficult for him to just keep dumping the ball into left field. The speed has me a little more worried, which is kind of a weird thing to say because he ran more than ever last season. Let's see, he had 29 stolen base attempts, which is more than he's attempted in several years. So that's good. But he was also caught stealing more than he had been in 7 or 8 seasons. So that's bad. And if you look at his sprint speed, you know, StatCast has this interesting thing where you can animate the little bars they have, and you can watch the skills change over time. Mm-hmm. And up until 2 seasons ago, you know, he was a top half percentile sprint speed guy, but the last 2 seasons, you know, he's hovering around 40%. So he is not fast anymore. And the fact that he stole more bases last season than he had in a really long time was kind of the result of just will and picking his spots rather than just being a fast guy who's going to steal bases. So I kind of feel like last season, especially in the season before, were a little bit of outliers. And I would not be shocked to see him drop back down to the 8 to 12 stolen base range, which is still good, but I'm not really banking on the 20 stolen bases again. I think next season you're looking more of like a 270, 275, maybe 280 hitter with 15 to 20 home runs, you know, 8 to 12 stolen bases. And, you know, a boatload of runs. He'll still be at the top of the lineup. Great lineup. He'll get on base. So great player, but you have to be mindful that the skills are eroding just a little bit.
And that's where in drafts, I'm having a tricky time. He's going 3 picks after Ozzie Albies, who has tons of question marks in his own right. Like, we really don't know. We've seen an amazing ceiling with Ozzie. We've seen a lot of injuries and a floor with Ozzie. He's Altuve's also going like, you know, 15 picks or so ahead of like Luis Garcia Jr., who a lot of us like for the power speed combo, but obviously so far showcased good batting average skills, but less than Altuve. So there's like this kind of pick your poison out of these three. And after these three, the second base position drops off pretty rapidly into a bit of kind of glob of what are you looking for. So that's where like I have some shares of Altuve, but I'm kind of also like, yeah, do I want to pull the trigger right here? It's kind of tricky, all things considered. But to the biggest point you mentioned, still going to be very good for fantasy. Still going to be pretty darn consistent, barring something crazy. And one of the first things you said is the heartbeat of the team. I know you had to have seen it, but you know, the Astros had their fan fest over the weekend, and Altuve had a lot of great comments. And just one is like, we'll talk Bregman later, but when you hear a 35-year-old has no reason to adjust to anything. He's proven it all. He's the team's captain, basically. Say, I'll do whatever it takes. When Bregman comes back, I'll play left field. I'll play wherever you want. That says a lot. Like as a Giants fan who's kind of been looking for a leader since Posey left, to have a guy like Altuve who doesn't need to do any of this, flat out say, I'll do whatever. Like, fine. No big deal. That says a lot about what your team is. Back even farther to your initial point about 8 years of success, it's because of that kind of mindset that your team has. So
yeah, love Altuve. You can see behind me, I got my Altuve autograph photo right there.
Yep, I see it. Yeah, there's every team needs a guy like that, and not very many do. All right, Yordan Alvarez, the guy that's every draft season goes around the 1-2 turn in 15s, and every draft season is the same conversation that comes up is, should we take Yordan Alvarez because of the knees, when yet he has played 140 games last year, 135, 143, had one down season, technically. Power's great. Average is great. Obviously will not run. ADP when we're looking at Yordan right now, Russell, is a whopping 17. So how are you feeling on Yordan Alvarez?
Yeah, I'm actually perfectly happy taking him at that ADP, especially with stolen bases being more prevalent. You can get your steals later. You don't have to get one of those power speed guys up top. So I'm perfectly happy taking Yordan at 18. And you know what you're getting with him. He's one of the best pure hitters in baseball. He's top five. He's a top five hitter in baseball per WRC plus behind Judge, Otani, and Soto. Hits the ball hard, consistently, barrels it. He's got great plate discipline. He walks. He doesn't strike out a ton. He's in his prime years. He's 27. We probably haven't seen his best season. He finally topped 600 plate appearances last year, full season, 635. Well, almost a full season. But yet, if I was going to find a wart, I'd say he's never hit 40 home runs, even though we all know he has that power. And he's got some ongoing knee concerns. You know, he had a knee injury late last season, and it was bad enough that he thought he was going to need surgery. He didn't get it. He says he's 100% now. So, you know, it's kind of a leap of faith you have to take that he's going to be healthy. And that's a leap that I have been willing to take. He played mostly DH last season. I think that's going to continue. I think he played 94 games at DH and 53 games in left field. Houston has a big problem in left field right now. So unless they solve that, they're going to need him to keep playing some games there. But I think he will be primarily a DH, even more so than he was last season. At pick 18, 19, that's a leap I'm taking. Everybody's got risk, and Yordan's a risk I'll take.
Yeah, you don't find a lot of power bats with a near 300 batting average. Very hard to find these days. So he kind of hits. We always talk about how power is something you need to nail early type deal. You need to get a lot of it, and then to couple it with batting average is pretty tremendous. So I'm got to the point where I'm okay taking him. I don't think I have, because I'm so in my mind stuck on stolen bases, but I'm not opposed to it as I have been in previous seasons. Yeah. One of the newest members of the Houston Astros, one of my favorite players for fantasy, and kind of, I appreciate in real life because he plays phenomenal defense at first base as well, is Christian Walker, who's coming over from the Arizona Diamondbacks, a guy that has, 20 to, before he got hurt last year at 26 homers, had over 30 homers for the back-to-back seasons. Kind of know what you're going to get. He's been a consistent profile for a few years. The Crawford boxes should do him well. ADP is about 95 for Christian Walker. He's one of my targets if I wait on first base. How are you feeling on Christian Walker joining the Houston Astros?
Yeah, I like him too, and I've been drafting him too. But I have to say that when they announced that signing, I sort of got some Jose Abreu vibes. If you recall on your show 2 years ago, I think I referred to Jose Abreu's skill set when they signed him as aging like a fine wine. heading into the 2023 season. And obviously 23 was bad, and then 2024 was a total disaster. And then, not to digress too much, but Houston's going to pay Jose Abreu $20 million in 2025. No. In the hunt for Bregman, that would be nice money to have. But truthfully, though, if you look at Abreu's three seasons before Houston and Walker's last three seasons, there are some things in common there, some trends in contact, walks, strikeouts, hard hit, barrels. I think what saves Walker is he's 3 years younger than Abreu was when he signed. And I think Walker's more of a pure power hitter than Abreu ever was. I mean, Abreu hit 30 a few times, but I think Walker is more of a pure power hitter than Abreu ever was. And given that he's younger, I think he's going to make it. I think the return on investment for Houston with Walker is going to be a lot more than it was with Abreu. So I like him right around pick 100. There's a bunch of first basemen I like. Yep. So sometimes I just pass him over, but I've taken him a few times and I feel pretty comfortable slotting him in at first base. He's going to be in a good lineup. He's going to be in prime part of the order. So as long as he stays healthy, he should get buckets of home runs and RBIs and should be a building block for your team.
And you got to hook him up. He said he's looking to try all the best barbecue in Houston. So that was one of his first things. I'm like, yep, he's going to fit in just fine around there. Yainer Diaz, catcher, Houston Astros, catcher two for most in fantasy. What I love about Yainer is a catcher with batting average. We've seen 20-plus homers. There's questions and discussions about what we should really expect in that department, but batting average he's done every time. That's a plus. Right now you have an ADP around 60 for Yainer Diaz. How are you feeling going in there? Because I've had some very good debates, nice cordially debates on, is he worth number two? Where should he be? And it is kind of a mixed bag out there.
I think he's worth it.
Me too.
There's a ton to like here. Just in terms of Yainer Diaz as a hitter, he makes consistent contact, consistently hits the ball hard. He's got good exit velocities. He didn't barrel the ball last year as much as he did in 2023, but I think that can bounce back. And, you know, he actually traded some fly balls for line drives in the second half last season. And that actually helped boost his batting average over 300 in the second half. So he's kind of, you know, he has such good skills and he's still young. He's kind of figuring out the kind of hitter he wants to be. And to be able to trade off some power for some batting average, you know, that bodes well for whenever he consolidates and kind of figures out what he's going to be moving forward. So, you know, I think he can be a power hitting, average hitting, you know, high average hitting catcher. And that's great. But, you know, on top of that, you also get the volume. 619 plate appearances last year. That's fifth among catchers. So that's a full-time player at the catcher position. That is really hard to find.
Yep.
He DH'd a bunch because they want him in the lineup. And they actually had him play in first base last season. He gained first base eligibility with a couple of weeks to go in the season, which was, you know, kind of cool to wake up on a late September morning and realize that you could plug Diaz in at first base and corner. So, yeah, I've actually been scooping up shares. I feel perfectly comfortable taking him right around where he's going. And I'm going to continue to do that as we shift over into Fab drafting season.
Yep, I'm 100% with you. Like, I love William. Obviously, most do. That's why you have to pay a premium for him. And it's been hard for me to do that, building other parts of my roster. So I gladly move to Yainer as my catcher one, like in drafts. Like, in reality, catcher one's still William. But I have zero problem having Yainer as my catcher one, all things considered.
I've taken them both on a couple of teams, actually.
Now, see, that's I would love to see how that build looks, because I love the idea behind it. I'm curious how the build looks. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
All right. Another new member of the Houston Astros, Isak Paredes, a guy that we saw a ton of pull power in Tampa, goes to a place where pull power goes to die in Wrigley. Now he comes to a place, if you haven't heard before, because everyone has mentioned it, the Crawford boxes might be great for Isak Paredes, who has an ADP of 205, and he looks to be, well, for now, the everyday third baseman. We will discuss that potential change, or actually he won't be moving, it sounds like. So what's your thoughts on Isak Paredes joining the Houston Astros?
The Crawford boxes. you know, as an aside, I sat in the Crawford boxes one time, and that was game three of the 2005 World Series. And that game went 13 innings. The Astros got swept by the White Sox that year. But that was a fun game to be at in any case. Isak Paredes. So yeah, he's not Kyle Tucker. You know, it burns a little bit that it costs Kyle Tucker to get him. But you know, he is a piece in this lineup, a valuable piece. He's good defensively. He's a quality hitter, and he's got that profile a lot like Jose Altuve's, where he doesn't have these crazy power metrics, but he's an extreme pull guy, and he knows how to just kind of put it in the air and dump it into left field. And so he's gonna hit the home runs. He's gonna get it into the Crawford boxes. If you look at the Savant's little metric where it shows what he would have done in different parks, his 19 home runs last year would have been 26 at Minute Maid.
That's so good. Nice bump.
So that's why they went out and got him, and he's gonna capitalize on it. So, you know, what did you say his ADP was? It's kind of right around 200.
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I have some shares of him way, way later than that, from early in draft season, but I still think he's a good pick at that place, and I'd probably even jump him up in the 180 range if I needed a third baseman. It gets pretty thin right around that time.
Yeah, he was the one of the many examples when why drafting early pays off, because when he was still a Cub, people were just terrified to draft him. You could have got him as like your third base two or three, depending on when you drafted. Like you mentioned now, still a pretty solid piece for the, especially for the power assets. I could see a bump taking place, and yeah, not the worst thing indeed. Shortstop, Jeremy Peña, a guy that 2 years ago, rookie year, did really, really well, hits 10, or a couple years ago, 22 and 11, then drops off to 10 and 13, but bounces back nicely to 15 and 20 last year. ADP has obviously fluctuated over this time, which has made it tough to get Peña. But right about now, he's settling in around 160 this year, which I think is kind of a sweet spot. It's like a middle infielder, or if for some reason you really punt shortstop, he's there. And I think it's kind of also, we kind of know who he is now. He's probably like a 15-15 guy with a ceiling, but like a good floor. That's my thoughts. What are your thoughts on Jeremy Peña heading into 2025 after we've had a three-year sample of this young player?
Yeah, I like him right around where he's going to. You know, he's in the lineup every day for his glove. And, you know, that volume makes him valuable as a compiler. He's kind of a league average bat. And there's value to having one of those in the lineup every day. His underlying skills look pretty consistent. But, you know, there were some interesting things that happened last season between the first half and the second half. He doubled his barrel rate from 3.4% to 7.4%. And you can see that five home runs in the first half, 10 home runs in the second half. So, you know, while the 15-20 repeat looks like the most likely scenario, you can kind of squint and see a 2020 season in there. He's the right age and, you know, growth can happen. And so I kind of see him as a 15-20 with a 2020 on the table.
Yeah, no, and then that's where I have a lot of shares of Peña between NFBC, between Underdog, just all these formats. I love where his ADP is and what he could bring. He fits in an interesting pocket where it's Swanson, Peña, Mason, Wynn. And honestly, it's one of those, if I somehow punt shortstop, I try to double tap that little world, and you can live with it. But I like all, that whole area, and I have a good amount of Jeremy Peña thus far. All right, we're going to head to the outfield now. We're going to talk about a few guys, and then we're going to group left field together here, which I'm glad you put on here, because when I was putting it together, I was looking at it going, that's going to be interesting. But we'll start here with Chaz McCormick. Last year we talked about Chaz. I was all in on Chaz. I'm like, 2020 dude, great price. I know you were interested in Chaz as well. As of now, he's starting in the outfield for the Houston Astros, and he has an ADP of around 440 to 450 right now as a starting outfielder. How are you feeling on Chaz McCormick?
Oh, man, what a difference a year makes.
Yes.
Yeah, like you said, at this time last year, he's coming off a near 2020 season with a 270 batting average. Now, he was an average hitter versus right-handed pitching, and he was absolutely mashing lefties. I mean, he had a 178 WRC plus against lefties in 2023. That was only in 115 games. So, you know, when we had this conversation last year, we were in this position where you could regress that a lot and then extrapolate it out over the whole season. And, you know, you're talking 2020 plus season, just, you know, enough to make your mouth water. So everyone's real excited. He was getting drafted pretty heavily. Obviously, last season didn't go very well. And so I kind of, I mean, you can look at his numbers and you could see, you know, career worsts and walk rate, OPS, WRC plus, hard hit, barrel. I mean, go down the list, average exit velocity, all career worsts. So I tried to figure out, you know, what happened. So then you walk through how the season went for him. And, you know, he started out slow. He didn't hit. And then he started sitting sporadically within the first week of the season. And then they announced he had a hamstring injury on April 12th. And then he kept sitting, playing sporadically. Then they finally put him on the IL on May 1st with that hamstring injury. Stayed on the IL for 20 days later. Then they activated him. And then he started sitting again immediately. He sat most of the games through the end of May. Then he sat a bunch of games in June and July with no explanation. And then he started getting platooned. He was sitting against right-handed pitching. And then they sent him down to AAA for 3 days.
Yeah.
And then he came back up a few days later. And then he went back on the IL on September 10th. He was removed from a game with a sore wrist. Turns out he had a fracture, so he went back on the IL, and then it was kind of all she wrote for the rest of the season. So, you know, I kind of feel like he just never really got a chance to be fully healthy and to play every day and to prove that he could be the everyday player that we were hoping for. You know, And the situation, if the situation in Houston were different, if it were like it had been in the past, you know, there'd be a log jam and he probably would have just lost his chance, but they really need him now. I mean, the outfield is weak. It's the weakest part of the team. So it looks like he's going to get a chance to try again. I think he's a much better player than what last season showed. You know, he had been a consistently above average hitter across three seasons before last year. So last year doesn't look like a skills decline to me. It looks like an injury plagued lost season. And at pick 469, 470, wherever he's going, that looks like an absolute smash of a gamble to me. You know, at that draft cost, all he really has to do is be a competent part-time player. And with that, you get the ceiling of an everyday player who can do what we expected last season. So I think that pick is a no-brainer, and I've been taking it.
I love it. No, I'm glad you broke it down the way you did, because it's one of those, like when we looked at that near 2020 season, and like most of it seemed pretty legit. Like he did this, this, and this. Like, okay. And then it just fell off the map last year, the playing time, the injuries and everything. So I'm with you at that drop of ADP. That's what's funny about this game we play, biases, recency biases. It goes in a weird way. So yeah, Chaz has been, every time I'm in that area of the draft, I see that name pop up. And I'm like, wait a minute. We have a guy that's going to start every day getting at bats at four. So yeah, we're in. Like that's a play for sure. Speaking of guys that might play every day going like 20 picks after Chaz, is another outfielder who was talk of the Fab world at one point last year. She's the next best thing. And then I just kind of petered out. 13 homers, 11 steals at 219. How are we feeling on Jake Meyers this year?
Yeah, I mean, he's at this point in a DC, he's not a terrible pick. But, you know, like Jeremy Pena, he's in the lineup for his defense. He's going to hit ninth. He plays a really good defensive center field, and that's why he's going to be in the lineup. Unlike Pena, he's not a league average bat. He's a well below league average bat. So, you know, he's got a little bit of pop and a little bit of speed, and he can go kind of 10-10, double digits on both like he did last season. So there's some value in that. But he's not a guy I'm going out and chasing. You know, you said he's going 20 picks after McCormick. Yep. You know, with a choice between those two, I'm taking McCormick every time. You know, Jake Meyers, he's a fine pick in a DC just as a, you know, an outfield filler, like an eighth or a ninth outfielder. But I haven't really been going out and getting him. Like the choice for me usually in drafts has been between McCormick and Meyers. And so I look at it as, you know, I'll take the low floor, high ceiling bounce back on McCormick rather than the low floor, low ceiling volume of Meyers.
Yep, I'm 100% with you. I have zero desire to actually draft Meyers unless I'm really desperate in the off. Like, I missed a lot and I need a guy just to get me PT. We're pretty much not there. All right. Obviously, there's a hole in the outfield. You mentioned Tucker going to Chicago. Both big Tucker fans here, obviously. It's an interesting situation of who, like, Roster Resource has Shea Whitcomb and Taylor Trammell platooning there. There's the Zach DiCenzo rumors that I know you're going to talk about, and I'll add on to that later as well. How do you see this playing out? Because I just looked real quick. Over the last 11 DCs, Taylor Trammell has not been drafted once. Zach DiCenzo, ADP of 508, and Shea Whitcomb has an ADP of 611. So yeah. How do you kind of attack that situation?
Yeah, it's weird. You know, not to jump ahead, but the Whitcomb and DiCenzo ADP – you know, those are from, you know, pre-Walker, pre-Paredes, people looking at those guys, because those guys are infielders, and drafters are looking at those guys going, there's a lot of opportunity in Houston's infield, and so DiCenzo and Whitcomb are getting drafted thinking, you know, there's a good shot they could be opening day third baseman, first baseman. What's going to happen in left field? I don't know. I don't think the solution is on the team, but let's just kind of play this game for a second. I don't see Taylor Trammell as the opening day left fielder. I just don't see that happening. Now Whitcomb, he's got an interesting power speed profile. He went 35-20 last year and 25-25 the year before. He debuted last year. He played 10 games in left field at AAA, but he's not really an outfielder. He's mostly an infielder, and I just don't see him taking that job. DeZenzo is a little more interesting. He's also a good power speed profile. He's a little bit of a better hitter than Whitcomb. He satisfies what I call the Horowitz rule. I had this blog post on my website called the Horowitz rule, where basically if you're a minor leaguer and Steamer or the projection systems project you to have a WRC plus of 100 or better, average or better in the major leagues, then there's a pretty good chance that you can be a productive fantasy player at least. So DeZenzo projects as 100. So I kind of like that. But he hasn't played hardly any outfield in the minors. I mean, we're talking just a few games. I mean, he's not an outfielder. Interestingly enough, earlier today, there was news that he's going to play left field in spring training. So, you know, they're looking at him and trying to find a way to get him into the lineup, and they see him as a potential option there. So it's going to be up to him. You know, if he can show that he could be a good defensive left fielder, or at least a passable defensive left fielder, then he's got a shot at winning that job and taking it. You know, left field in Houston is not a big space, so you don't have to have a whole lot of range. They hide Yordan there a third of the season. So it's not inconceivable that they could make it work with him. So he's not a bad DC pick later. I'd probably be looking at him later than the ADP that he's been taken at. One guy I think is a little more interesting is Jacob Melton. He's a minor league guy. He went 15 home runs and 30 steals across AA and AAA last season. He doesn't strike out a ton. He had a really nice max EV of 113, which puts him in good company. But he hits a lot of ground balls, so it doesn't translate to the home runs that it could. The projection systems all think he's a below average hitter, but they also think he's an above average defender. So, you know, there's a shot that he could take the job and run with it and win it out of spring training. Either way, I think he's a name that you'll see at some point in the majors next season. So just kind of put him on your radar. But truthfully, I don't think any of these guys will be the opening day left fielder. I think something else has to happen. You know, this, even with all the changes, this team expects to be a contender again. And I just don't see them heading into the season with one of these guys playing left field.
And that's kind of where I've been the whole time, just in, not even just left field, like the outfield in general does not feel like a team we expect to contend, which they are. So that's where it's interesting. And maybe Chaz bounces back like you talked about. That would make sense. A couple of things I want to hit on. That Horowitz rule article, armchairroto.com, was awesome. I remember reading that going, that is a brilliant way to look at 100 WRC plus for guys, because you broke it down on who's had those numbers in years past. Most of it checked out pretty darn good. So, like, there's a lot to that. So that was very, very interesting. Then I want to mention the DeZenzo thing real quick, because I got turned onto this probably a month or so ago. I wrote a PT Tomorrow column for HQ. I do the AL West. And in winter ball, DeZenzo was splitting between left field and first base. It was almost like a 50-50 split. So they started playing him. Like, you could tell the team must have called and said, hey, we need him in left field. Like, let's see what he's got. So whatever happened in winter ball that way, you know, we can't really find metrics on that. Maybe something looked good enough. We're like, okay, let's take it to spring and see where things go. Again, might just be all for like a fourth outfielder type thing to keep his bat on the roster, can platoon in the corner infields, whatever. But they started that in winter ball, which stood out to me as like, okay, maybe we're trying to do something here. Again, I'm with you. I think something different, and that something different could involve an Alex Bregman joining the team. So let's talk about that real quick, because for all we know, he might sign before this podcast gets released. That's the beauty of it all. But as of the recording time, the Tigers are still in. They apparently are offering more money in a longer-term deal. Astros are still heavily in as well, with some opt-out clauses apparently involved. Who knows? How do you see that playing out? Because it feels like with the Ryan Pressly trade, that everyone's saying it's basically opening the door for Alex Bregman.
Yeah, I mean, this has been pretty wild. So Jose Altuve is out there saying Houston should sign Bregman, and that creates a log jam in the infield. Mm-hmm. And Altuve is just saying, you know, I'll play left field. Bring Bregman in. He'll play third. Paredes will scoot over to second. And you'll have Altuve playing left, which, you know, I think that speaks to the kind of guy he is. You know, I think he's a future Hall of Famer, and just willing to give up the position he's been playing as a staple for, what, 15 years?
Yep.
I just think that speaks to his character and what a good clubhouse guy he is, that he's willing to do that and bring Bregman back. So, you know, as a fan, I think that would be awesome. Mm-hmm. And the trade of Presley, I did not see how much of Presley's contract they're Houston's covering. I imagine they're covering some of it.
I think they're covering like $5.5 million a year.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's something like that.
Yeah. So theoretically that frees up some salary cap space. So maybe they can bump the offer to Bregman a little bit. You know, Houston loves Alex Bregman, and I think his teammates do too. So I don't know. This seems like a long shot, but all this conversation is fun to have, and it's interesting, and we'll see what happens.
For sure. All right, let's head to the mound, where the rotation is still pretty, pretty good, folks. Headed off by Framber Valdez, who, you know, if you just look at the final stat line, still another phenomenal season. Kind of a hiccup at one point in the year, but then just finished nasty yet again. A guy that doesn't get as much love as I think he should. Still has an ADP between 60 and 70, which is still good, but if you just look at the year-in, year-out results from Framber, not the flamethrower strikeout guys, so maybe that's it. But man, it's just consistently good. So what's your thoughts on Framber?
Oh, yeah, totally. Four straight quality seasons from Framber now. Three with some pretty nice volume. He's got that elite ground ball rate that induces a lot of easy outs. But he's actually in a four-year trend of throwing his sinker less and less each season. He threw it 50% of the time in 2020, and now he's down to about 45. And he's throwing his changeup and his curveball a lot more. And those are both devastating pitches. The whiff rate on the curve is almost 40%, and the changeup is over 35%. And his slider's up there too, even though he barely throws that one. And the trend with the sinker less and the curveball more was really prominent between the first half and the second half last season. And so he kind of shifted that, and you can actually see that in the results. You know, he had a 3.66 ERA in the first half and a 1.96 ERA in the second half. His strikeout rate jumped from 20.3% in the first half to 29% in the second half, which is way above even his career of strikeout rate of 23.5. And if that sticks, it's not crazy to think that he could get back over that K per inning threshold that he's hit a couple of times. You know, that makes him even more of a legitimate ace if he can tack on more strikeouts than he's currently getting. But as things stand right now, I think he's a back-end ace. He's a solid foundation for your rotation. I like to grab one of the big guys up top. So when I've been grabbing Framber, he's usually my number two. But, you know, if you wanted to take hitters and grab Framber as your number one, you could build a solid staff doing that, and you'd probably be in a pretty good position.
Yeah, and you hit on what I was going to say next. Is I prefer him as my SP2. Like, he has the ratio support. So if the strikeouts are down, you're good, and you should be in line for tons of wins once again. And I like the flamethrowers that do get 200-plus Ks up top. But, yeah, if you go hitter heavy, which I have a tendency to do, it's been a problem of mine, some may say, Framber makes a good SP1 to help put those ratios kind of intact for a little bit before you move on to the next part. All right, now we've got a couple youth movement pitchers here. We got Hunter Brown coming off a year like everyone remembers was rough to start, and then probably one of the best pitchers in baseball for like the last two-thirds of the season. Right now you have an ADP of around 100 for Hunter Brown. How are we feeling for an encore season from Brown?
Oh, man, we're feeling great. I remember this time last year we were wondering if he was going to figure things out. And you can almost pinpoint the exact day that he did. It was May 22nd. So in nine starts before that, he had a 7.71 ERA, 5.52 FIP, 4.20 xFIP. And, you know, there was a big blow up in there kind of driving all that. But he was just kind of getting by those first starts. And then something flipped. And in 22 starts from that date forward, he had a 2.31 ERA, 3.04 FIP, and a 3.27 xFIP. And he just has all kinds of different ways to make it work. He has a super deep arsenal, six pitches, three of them with absolute elite stuff. He locates all six, five of them grayed out as better than average pitches on per pitching plus. None of them had an expected batting average over 249. He gets whiffs on all of them except the sinker, which helps drive that ground ball rate that he has around 50%. He just has so many different ways to get batters out, so many different approaches he can take. And I wouldn't be shocked to see him take another step forward next season. He's just, I think he's an absolute smash around pick 100.
Yep, I'm with you. I've very in on Hunter Brown. I have a few shares for sure. And especially if you do kind of play the pitching game as an SP2, Brown is pretty darn amazing. So I'm with you there. Let's go Spencer Arrighetti, who is a year younger than Brown. He had some very, very strong stretches last year and some hiccups as he was still growing pains. But overall, to me, good season, first good season in the bigs. And it's really interesting to me because, and I could be totally wrong here, but to me, it's like Brown's very, very good. I don't think Arrighetti's that far off, but Brown's ADP is around 100. Arrighetti's is like 210. I guess a massive drop off. And again, maybe I'm wrong. That's what you're here for to tell me. But what's your thoughts on Arrighetti this year?
Yeah, he's so interesting. I didn't go back and listen, but I definitely faded him on your podcast last year. he'd had 60 or so okay innings at Double A, but with big strikeouts, and then his Triple A appearances weren't very good. The strikeouts came down and the walks went up, and he only had a 9.7 K minus BB. So I looked at those things and I saw that he walked a lot of guys and he wasn't throwing too hard. He was throwing 92 and a half on his fastball. So I definitely remember fading him on this program. So you roll forward to 2024. He makes two starts at Triple A that weren't even particularly impressive. He walked 19% of the batters in those two starts. And Houston's just like, let's call the kid up and give him a shot. So as happens seemingly so often in Houston, he put things together real quick and became a fixture in the rotation. He maintained those big strikeout numbers, 27.1%. And somehow he brought the walks, you know, pretty far down, 10.3% on the season. I mean, that's not a low walk rate, but it was a very low walk rate for him. Mm-hmm. He increased his velocity just kind of out of nowhere. He went from 92.9 on the fastball in AAA, which is what he'd been doing all the previous season. And it just jumped up to 94.1. I have no idea how Houston does this. Do they just go to these guys and say, hey, kid, why don't you try throwing the ball harder?
Throw harder.
So there's that. So he uses that four seam really well, and he sets up multiple secondaries that look just almost unhittable. I mean, his curveball had a 156 expected batting average and a 42% whiff rate. His sweeper had a 160 expected batting average and a 38.6% whiff rate. He only threw his changeup about 9% of the time, and that got almost 38% whiffs. I mean, he just has multiple weapons. It's like you said, it looks a lot like Hunter Brown. He just has a deep arsenal. And if he could just keep those walks under control, he could really build on what he did in 2024. And he kind of did that as the season went on. In August and September, he got his walk rates down below 9%. So, you know, if that's something that sticks, there's really a lot of room for growth here. So, yeah, I'm buying Arrighetti.
Yeah, I've been finding myself at that point there on, you know, the 200s, probably like your fifth, sixth starter, maybe sixth, seventh, depends on how you draft. Maybe I'm bad with taking pitching early. He is definitely an upside pick I like there that could have a nice little ceiling. All right, now it gets interesting because there's Ronel Blanco through the no-no last year. There's a lot of pitchers that can succeed with smoke and mirrors. It seemed to me from the outside looking in, this was a smoke and mirrors. I don't know how I can trust it going forward. Could be wrong. ADP is around 240. Where are you at on Blanco?
Yeah. What a nice surprise he was last season. I think we all kept waiting for the bottom to fall out. And then, you know, he finished the year with a 0.75 ERA in September. He just got, you know, after a couple of hiccups, he just got better. Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, he's one of those guys that makes pitch mix so interesting. I'm trying to learn a lot more about how pitchers can change their pitch mix. He was a reliever in 2023, and he mostly threw fastball slider combo. You know, those two combined for about 90% of all the pitches he threw. His fastball was 94.5 miles per hour, and it didn't get very good results. So at the same time, still in 2023, he had this changeup that he only threw 81 times. That was about 9%. And a curveball that he only threw 20 times. So real small samples on both. And both had really nice results in extremely limited use. The changeup had an XBA of 251, an expected slug of 297, and a whiff rate of 37%. So, you know, Houston, you know, I don't know what happens. Houston looks at those four pitches and looks at those secondaries that he hardly ever threw, and they just say, okay, you're a starter now. Maintain your four-seam usage, throw the slider way less, throw your changeup and curveball way more. And then all of a sudden, Blanco has a more traditional mix. His three secondaries are just really devastating. His four-seam, which he was throwing with less velocity, was all of a sudden getting much better results playing off those pitches. And it's just kind of really cool how that all can work. Smoke and mirrors, I don't know. Can he do it again? The Sierra expected ERA, FIP, and XFIP, they all say that 280 ERA was a fluke. And, you know, that's hard to maintain. An ERA like that is hard to maintain for any pitcher, really. Mm-hmm. The projections say a major correction's coming. I think it's probably somewhere in between. You know, a lot of pitchers can beat the projections. There are just things that the projections don't capture. And I think a lot of that is factoring in his bad relief season from 2022. So I actually don't have any shares of Ronel Blanco because I put a lot of stock in the projections, maybe too much. But at pick 225-ish where he's going, he doesn't really have to repeat that 280 ERA to return value to you. He can fall back a lot, and that can still be a worthwhile pick. So, like I said, I don't have any shares of him, so I'm not really putting my money where my mouth is, but I think that's a worthwhile pick where he's going. I truly do.
Okay, that's good, because yeah, I look at the, you know, the XFIPs, the Sierras, all that, and then projections, I'm like, God, where is this coming from? But yeah, if he continues the pitch mix change, maybe there is something there. It's just, you got to believe is the way I look at it. You got to believe in Ronel Blanco to take that pick. A part of the Kyle Tucker trade was Hayden Wesneski coming back to Houston. Coming back in trade for Houston. He's a Houston boy, so he's coming home, as people documented over and over. And Wesneski's interesting to me, Russell, because for a long time there was hope he'd become one of the next good starters for Chicago. It never really happened. Really pitched well out of the bullpen. He had some moments as a starter. It was kind of a hit and miss. But now everything points he's the fifth starter. The Astros are saying he's the fifth starter. And he has an ADP of around 440, which if I'm getting a starting pitcher at 440, I'm pretty excited about that. How are we feeling with Hayden Wesneski?
Yeah, I'll kind of skip to the conclusion here. At 435, I think he's a great pick. Okay. You know, that's the kind of thing in a draft champions, at least, or in your final, with your final pick in a fab league, where you're not investing too heavily and everything doesn't really have to break the right way for the pick to return value for you. So now that we've jumped to the conclusion, I'll back up a little bit. Yeah, he's a good bet to be the fifth guy, and it's hard to know what you're getting. He hasn't really logged starter innings. He was mostly a reliever last season. And we threw 84 innings last year, 110 innings in 2023, 140 innings in 2022. So he's kind of moving in the wrong direction on the innings front. And he's had injury issues. You know, he was sidelined last year with a forearm strain. You don't like to see that. So there's a lot of questions here, but the talent is intriguing. His main pitch last season was a pretty devastating sweeper. It had a 163 XBA and a 288 expected slug and a 43% whiff rate. You don't see a lot of starters whose main pitch is a sweeper. So does that continue as Houston transitions him to a starter? I don't know. I don't really know what that looks like. But I do feel like Houston probably has some thoughts about it, which is why they acquired him. And they've worked their magic on a lot of different pitchers. So I think it's pretty exciting to see what they might do with him, because he definitely has some tools to work with. And like I said, at pick 400 plus, not a lot has to go right for that pick to return value. He could be, you know, a moderately valuable reliever, and pick 435 will give you some reasons to, you know, to plug him into your lineup and have value. So
yep.
I think he's a great draft pick.
Yeah, I love that ADP for him. Any other starting pitchers to think about? We heard over FanFest, like Luis Garcia's, I just totally blanked, Christian Javier, Lance McCullers. We're obviously waiting a little while to see them, if we, depending on how much we see them. So who else? Is there anybody else in the system to keep an eye on?
Yeah, I'm so tired of waiting for Lance McCullers. I hope he comes back and pitches and is healthy. But you just kind of have to wait and see if that happens. Truthfully, there's not really anybody else that I'm all that interested. Some minor league names that get thrown around. Colton Gordon, he's kind of a soft tossing guy who hasn't been able to maintain his strikeout rates in the higher levels. Brian Gusto, also not really that interesting to me. Miguel Ulloa is kind of interesting. He's flashed some big strikeout numbers in Double A, and then in a brief look at Triple A, he'll start 2025 in Triple A. He kind of reminds me of Arrighetti a little bit, with the big strikeout rates and the high walk rates. So maybe Houston can kind of do with him what they did with Arrighetti. But for me, it's kind of a wait and see, watch and see what he does in the minors. More of a fab target if he looks like he's doing something interesting. None of those guys have been drafted in a draft champions. Neither has Forrest Whitley, who I actually think is a little more interesting than all three of those guys. We all know Forrest Whitley. We all know he's been through a lot, particularly with injuries. But Houston converted him to a reliever last season, and you know, he had a decent relief season in AAA. And he finally made it to the majors. He still throws hard. He's got a 97 mile per hour sinker. He still has a deep arsenal. What's crazy, when I looked at this, he pitched just over 3.1 innings in the majors, but he used 7 different pitches.
Oh, wow.
You don't see that very often, especially out of a reliever. So he's not being drafted. I'm not telling you to draft him, but it wouldn't be crazy to see his name start popping up on fab runs, you know, a month into the season. So keep an eye out for him. You know, he still has whatever made him a top prospect. And if he's healthy and they're using him the right way, you know, he could be a name that pops back up on people's radars.
Love it. Love it. All right. It's into the bullpen. It's the Josh Hader show, as expected, and hopefully stays that way if you are an Astros fan. Hader has an ADP of 40-ish, 40 to 45 right now, usually the second or third reliever off the board, depending on your draft. How are we feeling on Josh Hader?
Yeah, I like the pick. He's one of the guys I'm perfectly comfortable taking up top. You can't really ask for much more than 30-plus saves and 100 strikeouts out of a closer. Sub-1 whip. I've actually been taking him over Class A. I know Class A has the better ratios, but saves totals could be kind of fickle. Mm-hmm. And I just like the strikeout numbers that Hader gives you. So I've been taking Hader and Diaz over Class A personally. Just those extra 30 or so strikeouts, they just make a big difference for me. So yeah, you know what you're getting with Hader. And I think he's a perfectly good first closer to take right around there.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you say over Class A, because I've been doing the Devin Williams over Class A, mm-hmm. and people have been looking at me. My mindset similar to you with the Hader theory. So we're kind of both on the same page there. Mentioned earlier in the show, Ryan Pressly gone. He's out of town. So it feels like we had this discussion last year, the year before. It's like Brian Abreu's the dude if he's there. So it looks like we're back on the Abreu train, ADP around 485 right now. So are you interested in something like that?
Yeah, I think he's a value pick, you know, way earlier than that. Just an elite relief arm. You could plug him in any week and feel comfortable with it if you don't have a matchup that you like for that ninth pitching slot. He's also going to vulture some saves. There'll be days where Hader isn't available, and Abreu will be the guy. And if Hader goes on the IL for any period of time, Abreu is going to be the guy. So, yeah, he's definitely worth a draft pick, especially if that 500 ADP sticks. I imagine he's going to start moving up with Presley out of the way, but he could move up a pretty considerable amount, and I think he's still a pretty valuable draft pick.
Yep, totally with you there. All right, we hit the bats, we hit the starting pitchings, we hit relievers. You mentioned the prospects. Anybody else we should discuss on the Astros that we had not mentioned yet? I think we hit most of them.
Yeah, not really. You know, Cam Smith is pretty interesting. He came over in the Tucker trade, but I don't think he's coming up in 2025 unless he really sets the world on fire. So I think we've covered it.
Perfect. All right, final question I have for you then. What are your expectations in 2025 for the Houston Astros?
Oh, come on.
World Series or bust once again?
World Series or bust. You know, this window is going to be open until it's not, and mm-hmm. World Series or bust.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, we're going to wrap it up there. As always, my friend, thanks for joining me. I appreciate chatting with you, and we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bubba. Always a pleasure.
All right, everybody. If you haven't followed him yet, make sure you check out Russell on Twitter at ArmchairRoto and ArmchairRoto.com. Always really interesting stuff. You can go back in the archives to what he's had there. He has a lot of really good, really informative stuff about draft champions and other formats and just fantasy think pieces is the way I like to say it. So good stuff there. But again, follow him on Twitter at ArmchairRoto. Until next time, this is Benched with Bubba, episode 726, your 2025 Houston Astros team preview. Catch you all next time.